Hey, before we get started, I wanted you to know that we're in the final week of the 2023 Max Fund Drive. If you enjoy Depression Mode, if you want it to continue, we need to hear from you. We have some fun thank you gifts. I'll tell you more about those a little bit later on. But while you listen to this week's episode, please go to MaximumFun.org/join. Find a level that works for you and join up. We need you. Thanks. On with the show. It's Depression Mode. I'm John Moe. I'm glad you're here. Gary Gulman has been a stand-up comedian for 30 years. He's one of only a few comics to appear on every major late-night talk show. He's released several albums and has made several stand-up specials. He is much beloved in the comedy world. I first met Gary Gulman when I interviewed him in the fall of 2017 in a hotel in Manhattan. Gary had been dealing with major depressive disorder since he was a kid, and it had gotten very bad. Gary had been getting inpatient care, and then, in his 40s, he had moved back in with his mom in Peabody, Massachusetts, because he couldn't take care of himself. When we spoke back then, this was for a different show I was hosting at the time, Gary was actually doing better than he had been, but he still wasn't good. This is Gary Gulman from that episode of The Hilarious World of Depression.
I often feel like a failure, you know, that I didn't reach my potential. Had I been, you know, I always say, had I felt good, I would have been unstoppable. When I feel good, I'm unstoppable, and I've just been plagued so many times and been held back by this illness, and it's been, you know, just the bane of my existence for so long and so consistently that I've had to work around it, and it's cost me time and so much energy, and I just feel like you know, as far as I can tell, I work harder than most, less hard than some. I'm pretty diligent about writing and listening to my sets and everything like that. But I always feel that I didn't reach my potential and so I have, you know, regrets and misgivings about that. I mean, I guess intellectually, I know it's the disease talking, but it feels so accurate.
After that conversation, Gary's improvement continued, and a couple of years later, in 2019, he released a new stand-up special, The Great Depresh, about his experiences with and recovery from severe major depressive disorder.
I lied for a long time about why I was in the hospital. I would tell people that I went there to adjust my medication, which, if you know how health insurance works, that's not done. But I was ashamed, and I was concerned about people's reactions to the real reason I was in the hospital. And the reason I went into the hospital was because my psychiatrist is an advocate for and an expert in something called electroconvulsive therapy, which used to be called electroshock therapy, but they felt electroshock was not quite horrifying enough. They said, yes, electroshock is disturbing, but I feel like we're soft-selling the convulsions. Yes, the writhing. If we could underscore the writhing, make that the centerpiece, I feel like we could really weed out the sissies and the mama's boys.
Today, in 2023, Gary is on tour with a new show, Born on Third Base, and he's feeling healthier than ever. We spend a lot of time on this podcast talking about what it's like to feel terrible, because it's good to know that, and people can relate and feel less alone when they are at their worst. We all help carry the weight for each other. But I thought it would be good to also hear about what recovery can sound like. Gary Gulman, welcome to Depression Mode.
It is good to be here. I'm honored. Thanks for having me on, John.
Nice to speak with you. Thank you for coining the term Depresh with your special, The Great Depresh. And thanks for not coming after us in Depression Municipal Court for using the term.
Oh, no, I'm honored. And also, there's absolutely no way I coined it. There's just too many people in the world with it for me to take any credit for it. Although I didn't get it from anybody, but I'm sure that there was plenty of parallel thinking.
Well, when you think about it, if you're depressed, to make it all the way through the word depression is a bit of a labor. So it's to just tap out after two syllables makes a lot of sense. I think a lot of people know your story, but maybe some people don't. How far back does depression go for you? When was the first flare up of that condition in your life?
I would say 1977. So when I was seven or eight, I feel like I had what I now know are symptoms of depression. Although I couldn't have, I just thought this is how everybody who wasn't very successful and or rich or good looking or something like that felt about themselves. And that the only cure for how I felt about myself was to do something that people would be excited about.
Is that what depression feels like to a 7 or 8 year old? Like I'm trying to get inside that worldview and then add depression on top of that. It's pretty difficult to imagine.
Yeah, I was sad a lot. I was lonely, and I believed that this is how everyone who is poor and not that athletic, not that cute, just how they felt about them, not understanding that the feelings of not feeling good about myself was the illness, not the manifestation of who I was.
How long did that go on of just thinking this is how people are? This is what life is like.
I would say I knew that it was distorted thinking. Mm-hmm. From the time I was 19 or so, when I was first diagnosed with depression, but it still felt like when I would read, there was a big sign on a building near where I went to therapy, and it would say, depression is not a flaw in character. I had to argue with myself to believe that, because I really felt I was a lazy person, and this was just what happens when you're lazy and you don't work hard and you're a bad person. This is what happens. I mean the insidious, one of the many insidious things about depression is that it convinces you that this is how you should feel and this is how you deserve to feel. So that's a problem.
What was that like, getting a diagnosis at 19 and finding out that you have a health condition and it isn't just a fundamental part of who you are?
Well, it was,
I mean, it was a fundamental part of who you were, but.
Right, right. I mean, it was helpful in some ways, but there was also so much stigma associated with mental illness. So it wasn't something I could really share with many people. And I still didn't understand that it was an illness. I understood, I guess, intellectually, but it still felt like it was me. And the fact that sometimes you can exercise your way out of feeling at your worst, or that you can go to therapy and feel better after the session. Sometimes you feel better, but at the same time, it's like, well, why didn't I just get out and jog 2 hours ago when I was beating myself up for all that time? So it's just, you're constantly paying a price for this thing. There are some side effects that are the positive, in that I feel like the depressed people are more empathetic than the average person, and also they're able to provide some comfort to other depressed people. But it's wily. It's wily. It reminds me of how people describe their relationship to their addictions and things, that their addictions are constantly trying to outwit them. And I feel that way with depression. I know it's a different type of thing, but it sounds like a similar type of idea.
That diagnosis, was that the beginning of thinking of it as as a separate thing, as a medical condition, as a mental health condition? Or did you continue to be fooled into thinking that this is how life is, this is how you are, you're terrible?
Well, I got the diagnosis in July, and then in February, I started taking medication, and the medication, it was an old fashioned medicine. It was called nortriptyline, and I took it for a couple of weeks, and it was almost like a overnight once it kicked in. So I felt the way I usually did one night, woke up the next day and had energy and had a feeling like, oh, I remember what this used to be like, feeling like me, enjoying things and looking forward to things and being myself and not being overwhelmed by minor tasks and chores and full of dread and angst. So that was sort of I have a chemical imbalance. As long as I can remedy the chemical imbalance, I can be okay. But from then till 2016, it was periods of feeling fine and occasional episodes that lasted anywhere from 2 months to 6 months, where I was not functioning at even 70% of my potential. And it was just very frustrating to try different medicines. And I know I did this, and I know other people do this, where you take something that doesn't make you feel yourself, but it doesn't make you feel completely depressed and unable. So you compromise. And that's what I did up until, I would say, 2017. So I was never firing on all cylinders, and I was seldom really myself. I would have moments, and unfortunately, the thing that I kept getting for feedback was I would have a great show, or I would accomplish something, and I would feel really good. And so I thought the cure was accomplishments. And that isn't the case. It turns out it was a combination of different things, and none were probably the only reason, and none were more important than any other. I just feel like in 2017, I started to, and it was the worst, longest depression and anxiety that I ever had. It lasted for 2.5 years, but maybe that's what it took for me to attack this problem with everything that I had and everything my doctors had.
It's hard, I bet, to make calculations when you're trying different meds and you have this career in comedy and you have some ups and downs there. Like, how are you even able to tell what was causing what? Like, especially if you're on more than one med at a time.
Yeah. No, it is a bit of a mystery, but I do know that there was a bit of a building process or a rebuilding process, and that I had several, I would say in the neighborhood of a dozen treatments with electroconvulsive therapy while I was in the hospital in 2016 or early, I think it was early 2017. I think it was February of 2017. Had more in the spring of 2017 as my recovery started to relapse. And then we added a new combination of medicine after the second run of ECT treatments. And within a few weeks of that was when you and I did our first interview, in which I would say that was, I can remember either the day before that or the day after that, I exercised vigorously for the first time. And so if we take it in order, the ECT followed by the medication the medication got me to a point, or both those things got me to a point where I was able to exercise. Once I started to exercise daily, then I started to be able to feel better about myself, or better for more time during the day. It was sort of like an extra treatment, the exercise. And then I made this rule where I had to accept all invitations and also try to make my own meetings to be with people. And so I added that into the mix.
This is all fresh off the ECT.
Yeah. And then I started adding reading about things that were positive or motivational, and then I started eating much better. I cut down on sugar significantly. And so it feels like all of these things just kept building, because it's almost like with the sugar, it's very difficult to eat right when the only pleasure you're getting is from pizza and ice cream. So if you're getting pleasure from the exercise or from spending time with friends, I think you're less likely to overeat or crave certain things. Sugar can sometimes throw people's at least my mood off if I consume too much, and there's really not a case where I just have a little bit of sugar. I overdo it, so I really have to be careful.
So at this point, that is your climb back to better health after this 2.5 year down period.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And has that stuck?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I'm thriving.
More with Gary Gulman in just a moment. We'll be back with more of Gary Gulman in just a few moments, but we need to take a moment now to talk about how we are in week 2 of the Max Fun Drive. It's the one time of year that we come to you and say, hey, making a show does cost money. After all, it does take support from listeners in order to make this happen. And we ask you to join up and to, you know, put a nickel in the jukebox, more than a nickel, really, to help keep this thing going.
Five bucks
a month. $5. I don't know how many nickels that is, but it's a few nickels.
But it's $5 worth. It's $5 worth of nickels is what we're looking for, everybody. Absolutely everyone has $5 that they can throw Max Fun. Or if you don't sweat it, but seriously, I think you got $5.
That's Jackie Cation from the Jackie and Lori show. Yeah, Laura's sitting in for Laura. Yeah.
It's Jackie Cation from the confrontational show, the Jackie and Lori show.
That's right. The Jackie Cation.
I'm channeling Lori Kilmartin right now. She's like, get off your asses, chop chop.
Come on.
And come on already. Are you listening? Has it been free all this time? You could throw $5. It does cost to put the shows up.
And former guest on Depression Mode, Jackie Cation, thank you so much for being on the show. You were actually on our 100th episode as well. We counted down some of the episodes that kind of stuck in our memory the most, and yours was one of those.
Oh, that's cool, since my depression is a broad and Catholic thing. It is occasional and yet very, very impressive when it does occur. It really packs a punch when it comes in, because I'm mostly cheerful, right?
Uh-huh. And just having you talk about it is what we do here. Like, this is a topic, mental health, depression, anxiety disorders, OCD, all these things have been kind of kept hush-hush for most of the history of civilization, and it hasn't done us any good. It hasn't been a good thing. And we try to go the other way on this show.
Right. And shining a light on it just makes everybody able to talk about it. You know, everyone's journey is just as valuable as anybody else's, but we all know that, like, my trauma is not so great as that of a boy soldier from Sierra Leone. But it doesn't mean that my trauma doesn't need to be addressed. And have a light shone upon it so that it can dissipate. And that's the cool thing.
And that's what we do here on Depression Mode. And I really like this idea, Jackie, of you being the chop chop kind of drill sergeant on this $5 a month thing.
What the heck, you guys? It's, I mean,
let's go bad cop here for you.
Exactly. For it's right. It's, what is that? $60 a year? $60 a year. $5 a month is literally a decent cup of coffee right now. Or what are you doing, a kombucha? What are you having? You having with some sort of fancy, other kinds of fancy beverage?
Yeah. And some kefir, but it's just, or something.
Right, it's once a month. You get maybe a nice yogurt, uh-huh. and podcasts. They're free, but they don't cost us nothing. So we appreciate it if you can pitch at least $5 a month, and if you can do more, please do. But we appreciate the support.
Even at $5 a month, you get bonus content. If you are member of Maximum Fun, if you are donating to Maximum Fun, if you're supporting Depression Mode, if you're supporting the Jackie and Lori show, you get access to the bonus content from those shows, as well as the bonus content from all Maximum Fun programs. It's right. Kind of a great deal.
It's an amazing deal, and it's just another way that Maximum Fun really does kind of try to share the wealth, right? Your $5 a month gets you, I believe, the bonus content for all the shows. Mm-hmm. Like, Lori and I did a live Q&A with our fans over Zoom, and the audio for that is our bonus episode, and it's just the crazy stories. We name names, things mm-hmm. happen, and it's a chance to hear an extra hour of podcast. So
yeah, and with Depression Mode, we've had a lot of big name guests on this year. We had Oscar winner Jamie Lee Curtis on the show. We had the Surgeon General of the United States. We had Paulina Poretskova, which was a sort of intimidating experience for me. But in our bonus content episode, we talk to you, the listeners. It's an all-listener show that we called What Works For Me. So it's people talking about the often odd and eclectic little techniques and tactics they use to treat their mental health. So we have a wonderful story about listening to Bollywood music. We have all sorts of stories of people's encounters with different sorts of media. Somebody likes particularly upsetting documentaries, and they talk about how that has benefited them.
Right. The people who like upsetting documentaries, I think that's like it's a cathartic.
Yeah, I think so.
When people listen or watch horror or read horror books or watch those true crime stuff. So whatever you got to do, man, to get through the day.
Whatever you got to do. And so when you join at $5 a month, you get, I mean, the big satisfaction you get is the satisfaction of knowing that you've made this show available to everybody else in the world. And in addition to yourself, you also get our sincere gratitude, which is, you know, not nothing.
Right. That's a right? value.
And then you also get access to all the bonus content from all, what are they, 37 shows now on Maximum Fun? You get
hours
and hours. Yes. Yeah. Worker owned. Right.
Yeah, which is neat.
Which is, you know, such a refreshing new approach in the media landscape. It's
right. Look at Maximum Fun not being a monster. I love it. Right. I love it.
Right. So yeah, in case you haven't heard, Jesse Thorne, the owner or founder of Maximum Fun, is selling the company to his employees. And so he'll be one of many co-owners of the company going forward. And it'll be a worker-owned collective. I try not to make it sound too much like the old Soviet Union when I talk about it, but it will be collective.
It will be, and there will be vodka, and there will be bread for everyone every day. And you make a nice soup.
Yeah,
anyway, so
a bone broth. So we're going to get back to Gary Gulman now. And while we listen, just hop on your phone or hop on the computer. Go to MaximumFun.org/join. Find a level that works for you and then pick the shows that you want to support. And you're off to the races and you're doing a good thing and you're helping people and you're helping other people hear the shows as well. You can join anonymously if you want. You can give a membership as a gift to a friend. You can even give a gift membership to a complete stranger, somebody who can't afford to join. So you find the system that works for you and go to MaximumFun.org/join. And there are other thank you gifts available that Jackie and I are going to tell you about a little later in the show. Jackie, we'll see you then.
Thanks.
We're back with Gary Gulman, hospitalized with major depressive disorder just a few years ago and thriving today.
And I haven't had this long nor this durable stint in my entire life. I kind of date my recovery at around November of 2017 when I started to get back on the road and feel right. And I didn't have the issue of, well, I may have to cancel this because I'm not feeling up to it, either meeting with people or doing shows or things like that. So from November 17th till now, it's over 5 years. My doctor told me a relapse is very unlikely after this length, but also it's not even the length of it. It's also the quality of this recovery, in that outside of grieving for my dogs that passed away, I haven't had days where I just couldn't function. And that was something that was pretty common, that there were days where I couldn't be part of a day. And that hasn't happened since I would say that previous summer. So the summer of 2017, but the recovery early in the fall it didn't happen very quickly. But it was mostly linear. It just wasn't, it wasn't very dramatic. So that day that I'm talking about, when I exercised around the time that we had that interview, my exercise was to run on New York City sidewalks until there was a don't walk sign, and then I could rest. And so I would just run two blocks, and then there would be a don't walk, and I'd rest, and then I'd jog to two or three more blocks. And it was a great way to start out. And I was listening to a short book that lasted 28 minutes, and it was by Oliver Sacks, and it was about gratitude. I think it was called Gratitude. And gratitude is another thing that I did that probably contributed. I would write down 5 or 10 things I was grateful for every morning. And I can't say that if I had to do it all over again, I would include that as part of my recovery, is just being grateful for small things. I've read where that type of list is helpful to something in your brain or your thinking or your outlook. So I recommend that.
So you kind of came at this recovery on a number of fronts. Like, it was the ECT, it was the meds, it was the exercise, it was the gratitude. Was that all by design all at once, or was that kind of an improvisational approach?
Well, I knew that spending time with people was important. Mm-hmm. And I probably learned that along the way, either from a doctor or just trial and error. And then I knew that the exercise was going to be important. That is just, everyone will tell you that. But the gratitude was something somebody had suggested along the way. And so I just would apply these things, anything that would help. And I sort of made up that thing about accepting all invitations. So I would wind up having breakfast or lunch with audience members who I met after the show. And the other thing that I think was so important was that I redefined what success was for me. And it was very important when we started pitching the idea of this show about being depressed and recovering, that if everyone said no, I wasn't going to have a breakdown and be discouraged and give up. So my definition of success for that was, even if it doesn't get on television, I need to go out and tell this because it may help 100 people here and 100 people there. And that is really success. That is anything above that is, and it doesn't even have to be 100 people. It could be 5 people or saving one person. It had to be something that was within my control, and going out and telling my story was in my control. I was very grateful I was able to perform again. So that was really important. And I think it took a lot of the pressure off of the performance, where I didn't feel like I was auditioning for something every night. And it also enabled me to fail frequently, that it would bomb and I wouldn't say, oh, it's all over. And I had already succeeded by just telling the story. So it was just, it really let me off the hook.
Mm. It's interesting when you talk about being a kid and having this idea of this terrible feeling, this is just part of being me. This is part of being a human. This is reality. When you were in the process of recovery, did you have that feeling again of like, well, this isn't really me. I'm going to slide back in. I'm going to, you know, go back into one of these cycles that I've been through so many times.
Yeah, I think that would come up from time to time. And I remember when I had two dogs, and the younger one passed away first in, I think, August of 2018. And I was devastated, of course, but also I was blaming myself and felt that it wasn't normal grieving. And so I went to my doctor, or called him, my psychopharmacologist, and I said, I'm having these feelings of guilt and blaming myself, and I'm not feeling the way I have been. And I don't think it's normal grieving. And he said, well, why don't we add 20 milligrams to the duloxetine that you take and see how that feels. And within 4 or 5 days, I wasn't over losing my dog, but I was no longer blaming myself and feeling that I never wanted to have a close relationship with anything again, because I would be so devastated. It took away that filter of dread and guilt, and so that was another important thing or lesson, was that I need to be really vigilant. I can't let it go a couple of weeks where I feel depressed over my dog and don't want to bother my doctor. And I remember when I went to Hawaii last year for my honeymoon with my wife, we got there, and for a couple of days I was way off, and I wasn't as energetic, and I felt anxious, and I called my doctor. He says, you need to spend some time in the sun. Your circadian rhythms are off from the travel west, and so spend some time in the sun and exercise today, because I was sitting by the beach thinking that was what I needed. He said, get some exercise. And then within 36 hours, 48 hours, I felt like myself. So it's this lesson that I learned. Don't wait till it gets 2 months, 3 months down the road or your next appointment, but attack it when it's still manageable. So all these lessons I learned partially because I had fallen so far, I am afraid to go there again. So I will say that for the first 6 months, for the first 9 months that I started feeling well, I thought it's going to be a few months and maybe there'll be a test. Maybe there'll be something discouraging and I could backslide, but I kept a mantra of we'll figure it out instead of uh-oh, which had always been my mantra.
It's not a very good mantra.
Yeah, I'd always been anxious about these things, and so I kept saying we'll figure it out. And when I had to do an audition for HBO, I said if they don't want it, maybe somebody else won't want it, or I'll just tour this, and maybe it'll get better, maybe someday. But I didn't have that all or nothing mentality that had brought me so low. So I was very grateful. I had to change my entire philosophy of accomplishment and success.
How hard was that to do, to change a philosophy like that?
it wasn't that hard because the alternative was, I mean, I was suicidal so frequently, so that it was so dire. And I also, once I started to feel better and my brain was working, I realized, oh, I've got a pretty excellent life. I have this woman who loved me at my lowest point. I have these great dogs. I have a profession that I look forward to going to with interesting colleagues. And I'm very lucky, but I couldn't see that within the cloud of depression. So it just, and once I was out, I was just so grateful. And the other thing that I'm so grateful for is that I always used to fantasize about getting better and helping people get better. And that's what I've been able to do in a number of different ways. And I'm so grateful for that people trust my input and my opinion and look to me as kind of somebody who recovered and didn't give up and somebody they can look to for guidance and also somebody who is older than most people who I feel like a lot of people think how they are at 18 is going to be the way they are at 30 or 40 and I know I thought it, well, if I'm this way at 30, I'm only going to get worse at 40, but I can say it at 52 years old, I'm happier than I've ever been in my life. And I feel safer and better about myself than I ever have.
What was it like then being so public? I mean, the HBO special did happen and for better or worse, you are sort of the go-to guy for depression in comedy. Did that make you work harder at staying healthy because you knew everybody was kind of looking to you for an example and for guidance?
I think that on a day when, for instance, when the pandemic first started and we were in lockdown, I knew that this was a test of my recovery. And I went back and I wrote down all the things, and there were like six or seven things, and I think I've covered all of them today, but I wrote down the six or seven things I did to get out of it and made sure I continued to do all of them. The only one that really I was having a hard time with was the fact that I usually spent time with a friend or at a show every day, and that was difficult to do. But then I realized that either FaceTime or even just a regular old-fashioned phone call was very helpful in getting that kind of connection. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't ideal, but it was miles better than nothing.
I was gonna say, using the little-known phone app on your phone, but then I realized that's a Gary Gulman joke. That's where I heard that one from.
Yeah. Seldom used app on my phone. Yeah,
the most seldom used app. What have you come to understand about how, you know, if we can anthropomorphize depression for a moment, about how this character works? Like, what have you figured out about it now that you have been in a better place for a while?
Yeah, I think that it is relentless in that it will always try to come back and it's lurking. But I also think this is interesting because I've never tried to anthropomorphize it, but maybe with your help, do you think that, because sometimes I think, oh, all it took for me to get rid of you today was a 15-minute jog. Like you are not that powerful. You persevere, you're persistent, but I was able to get rid of you in a 15-minute jog. I was able to get rid of you with a 30-minute phone call to a friend I've been putting off calling. I was able to get rid of you with a few very, very common practices in terms of talking back to the depression, sort of cognitive behavioral therapy type things. It is it is, at least in the state it is right now, where it could just be a not getting enough sleep the night before. That's another thing that I must say, that getting enough sleep is really important. Like 7 or 8 hours at least has been really helpful in maintaining my mood and also warding off anxiety and illness, which frequently, if over the years when I've gotten a cold or when I had COVID, I got depressed, and but that's a symptom of those viruses. So I would say that depression is persistent, but with some pushback and some strategy, it is defeatable. And I guess that's the thing I was hoping to get across, and I still try to get across, that depression is telling you it's never going away and that you're hopeless, but people do recover and it does go away. I forget where I read it, but they were saying sometimes it just goes away and you don't know why. I remember as a high school student, every April my depression would lift, and it was probably associated with the sunlight and exercise and this pressure I put on myself during basketball season, and the everything would lift and I would feel better and it. But I couldn't connect them. I was not. I'm one of those people who keeps eating chocolate that even though they're allergic to it or something.
More with Gary Gulman in just a moment. We'll be back with more from Gary Gulman in just a moment, but right now I'm here with Jackie Cation of the Jackie
Gary
and
Gulman.
Laurie Show.
Gary it's Gulman. It's true. You got to love Gary Gulman. You have to, actually. It's actually quite a rule right now.
Yeah.
My name is Jackie Cation. I'm on a show called The Jackie and Laurie Show here on the Maximum Fun Network. And we're talking about The Drive, because The Drive
it's
is
the
this,
drive.
This second week of The Drive. We only do it once a year. Once a year, we remind you that podcasts are not free. And you might want to throw some cashola toward your favorite podcasts. And then you get the bonus at the $5 level. You get all of the podcast bonuses. Like the bonus
all
episodes.
The bonus content, yes.
But at
the
like
Boco.
10 or 15 or 20 or $200, swear to God, if you were to give $200 a month to the Jackie and Laurie Show, even the Depressed Show, I'd call you. But
yeah.
there's actually a tier for that. And
I would shed a tear for that.
You would shed a tear for that, but there's a tier. Like, I think the $10 one, you get stickers, right? You get the...
Yes, the restickable stickers. This blows my mind.
Is it a magnet? What are they doing?
No, it's. I've tried it. They sent me some, and I've been putting it. I showed my daughter, because you know the big thing is the nice stickers all over your water bottle when you go to school.
Right.
So I've been saying, look, you put it on here, you change your mind, you could put it on something else. It's really perfect for somebody with anxiety.
right.
Because like, what if you put it in the wrong thing? Well, that's okay. You just peel it off and put it somewhere else.
That's amazing.
Our sticker on Depression Mode has our mascot, waterfall climbing fish. This is an actual kind of fish that the folks at Just the Zoo of Us on Maximum Fun told us about as a possible icon for our show. It's this little fish, and it spends its life climbing up the sides of waterfalls. And then
wow.
I think it lays its eggs, and the eggs go down to the bottom of the waterfall. I'm not sure what the point is for this fish, but it's very determined.
It's a Sisyphus. It's a
Sisyphean task. And
it's that's the name of the fish, Sisyphus.
It's in our illustration, we did put some sweatpants on it to make it fully represent clinical depression. And so that's available. You can also choose all sorts of other stickers. What do you have for Jackie and Laurie Show?
It's a tiny image of the two of us. It's got a picture of the moon, and it says one of the quotes from an episode where we shoot for the stars, but we get booked on the moon because the Jackie and Laurie Show is about stand-up comedy. It's about how we've both been doing stand-up for over 30 years, and it's going fine. What is it? MaximumFun.org/join is the website where you would go and pick a level and you get trinkets, you guys. There's like a food trinket where you get the cool cookbook that has all of our...
Tell them about this. This is at the $20 a month level.
Lori and I, they asked us separately if someone would send a recipe in for the cookbook. And I was like, she's not doing it. I guess I'll do it. And she thought to herself, she's not doing it. I guess I'll do it. So there's two there's two recipes, one from me and one from Lori.
Jackie and Lori.
Yes, I'm sure Lori's has some sort of red delicious apple involved and maybe a little glass of gin and some baby carrots in honor of her mom. But mine is a chicken recipe. It's a very basic, adorable, awesome chicken recipe because I love a roast chicken, you guys. What did you put one in?
Yes, I put in, in the upper Midwest, we would call this a salad. It's has marshmallows. Cool Whip. It has pistachio pudding mix. Has crushed pineapple. We call it marshmallow crappy. I've been making it in my house for years. It's a holiday staple.
It is not a salad. It is a dessert.
You know, salad can encompass a lot of things in the upper Midwest. I'm not from here, but I've been acclimatized to that.
Yeah.
And I'm catching on.
I will tell you this, is that a friend of mine actually, she was at a party in North Dakota, and they said, have you tried the Oreo salad yet?
Ooh.
And do you think your daughter... would like some Pepsi in her sippy cup? Absolutely not. How about that? How about we all wait till later to have Oreo salad?
There's a lot of recipes in the Max Fun Family Cookbook. And at the $20 a month level, you also get the bespoke jar of spices that could be used to pep up just about any food. It's like specially made for Maximum Fun. I have sprinkled it on popcorn and found it to be intriguing and delicious.
I am making a chicken with it today.
There you go. There you go.
It's got a little bit of spice to it, but it's mostly just super flavorful. So,
yep. So
it's delicious.
You get the cookbook and the spices at the $20 a month level. If you bump on up to $35, you get all these things that we talked about. You get the bonus content. You get the cookbook. You get the bespoke spices. You get the stickers. And at $35 a month, you get the apron, the Maximum Yum apron, it says in big friendly letters.
Get it, you guys? So it's MaximumFun.org/join.
Yep.
And throw some cash at this, at his show, at my show, at some show, just because podcasting. See this new? I have a new microphone. Do you hear how great it sounds?
It sounds
wonderful. Wasn't free. No. Turns out it wasn't free, you guys.
You want to be communicating clearly, and you want to be
chip in,
reaching
if
people.
You can.
It's so easy to do. You just find a level that works for you. You go, first you go to the website. You go to MaximumFun.org/join. I don't know if we've said that enough, MaximumFun.org/join. I think we probably have. And then you find a level that works for you. You pick the shows that you want to support, and then you pick out your thank you gifts. And then you just enjoy life knowing that you have helped make the programming you love available to yourself and to the world.
It's the once a year, hey, throw some cash our way. You can do it.
Come on, man. Do it. Jackie Cation, good luck with your show and good luck on the drive. And thank you so much for helping me out today.
You're welcome.
We're back with Gary Gulman. In the next segment, I bring up Gary's set on Conan when he talked about the origins of state abbreviations. It was and is a hugely popular comedy set. Look it up on YouTube. Particularly among other comics. Here's a taste.
Alaska AL, Alabama AL. We did use that one before, boss. And the boss said, guys, not a big deal. We'll come back to it. It's not going to happen again. Certainly not going to happen 27 more times. Foreshadowing. So what's next? Arizona, AR. There we go. We're back on track. Next, Arkansas. Shit. No, we'll come back to it. It's not going to happen again. What's next? California, CA. There we go. Next, Colorado, CO. Momentum, Connecticut. We are screwed.
So now you know what we're talking about when I mention this set that he did on Conan. It could be that I just wanted to play you a little clip of that set because I love it so much. I don't know. Who's to say?
I mean, I think that what we're hoping for is an immediate turnaround, an immediate cure when cognitive behavioral therapy and exercise and these types of things are cumulative, and spending time with friends are it's cumulative, and getting enough sleep and also combined all four of these things is helpful. But our brain is saying, I talked back to you and I feel a little bit better, but it's still there. But it's trying to get you to stop doing it at all. And if you just can hang in there and keep doing it week after week, month after month, keep exercising, keep talking to yourself in the right way. And then it wasn't overnight, but then you look back and it feels dramatic, the change. And it was a few months and it was dribs and drabs, but eventually it got easier. I put off exercising for less time and less time. And my brain convinced me, oh, if you can exercise right off the bat before you even build up enough excuses and think about it and get out there, you're going to feel terrific. And the other thing was just these compromises I would make. I would say, just run for 5 minutes. If you don't feel good after 5 minutes, you turn around, you can walk back, and that'll be a 5 minute walk back. You'll have exercised for 10 minutes. And I don't remember a single time where I didn't do it for at least 15 minutes. So your brain and your reasonableness, because it sounds very reasonable,
yeah,
to your brain. 5 minutes. Yeah, of course I can do this for 5 minutes, and
right,
and it's not that painful. And then the hardest part is over, which is starting.
Do you think if the voice that tells you, don't go exercise, if that took over, you stopped exercising, you know, you grabbed a couple of Toblerones from the hotel minibar, you know, the sugar came back. Do you think that there's a path to being right back into those spells that you used to be under for such extended periods of time?
Well, I think I would be vigilant enough and have pride in my recovery enough that I would seek an intervention within a week. I don't think I would let it get past a week. The other thing with depression and emotions is that there's also a desire to avoid or ward off things that could be emotionally difficult, things that could be upsetting. So my dog passed away, and it's been, the second dog passed away in October of 2021, or 2020 rather, I think. And I haven't gotten another dog because I know how awful I felt, but that's not healthy. I don't think, I think, They brought me so much joy and love. And I'm thinking about the last months, which were very sad, but I still think it's you don't want to become afraid of taking chances with your mood or your life. And even if you're avoiding joy and connection and love and things like that. I mean, I'm talking about dogs, but for some people they don't want to try another relationship or another marriage, or get too close to someone, or tell a friend how they feel or what's going on. And I mean, one thing I learned throughout this was telling people about my illness made me closer to them, because a lot of times they felt comfortable telling me how they were feeling or opening up to me. I made such great connections with people while I was touring who would come up to me after the shows and say that this really resonated with them and that it made them feel better. And every single day I get at least a message from someone who says that Great Depression helped them, or they rewatch it when they're feeling down, or it got them back into therapy, or got them to try medication or ECT or going into the hospital. And that feels really great, but it's also, I don't want to overstate this, but it's almost like that idea of when Odysseus brought back the tail, of how he did it. It was very helpful, and I feel like I don't have the elixir, but I have a lot of things that helped me, and also the story that I was giving up every day, and until I stopped that type of thinking, and so I'm very happy to share that story and accept every opportunity to do that.
Is it hard to? I mean, I'm sure there's so much love that people reach out to you with, and you know, a lot of these stories are, I'm sure, are very happy because they're getting treatment, they're reaching out for help. But behind that, of course, there's a lot of pain that they were reaching out from. And I'm sure you hear those stories as well.
Yes.
Is that hard to take on? Like Chris Gethard said, it's psychic damage, that you're taking on everybody's psychic damage after a while, and that kind of adds up. Has that been hard?
It's interesting that you say that, because my friend Mike, who directed the special, and Judd Apatow, who are the producers, I was friendly with Chris, but I had never gone out to a meal with him, and they put me together with Chris and before the special came out, and he told me this is what you can expect. People are going to reach out to you, and it can be very painful, and yeah, it's what did you call it, a psychic
damage?
Yeah, psychic damage.
That's Chris's term that he told me. Yeah.
Fortunately, I didn't. His special was more about a suicide attempt, and so I think I didn't really talk that much about any suicide attempt in my special. So I think I hear from less people who've attempted suicide than Chris does. So I mean, he didn't show me any of the messages. He just showed me the volume of messages that he had yet to get to. And I thought, my word, this is really overpowering. And you're assuming that most of them are people who suicide attempt resonated with, whereas mine is more along the lines of my not feeling well and not telling anybody about it resonated with them, or that their family didn't understand it, and they showed it to their family and they understood what they were going through. They also understood there was a thing that I always said, that it was always surprising to hear somebody very successful had depression, and for whatever reason, it made me feel better, that there wasn't an accomplishment I could get to that was going to cure my depression. This was something that was immune to success and adulation, and that always made me feel better, that it wasn't for lack of effort and dedication and discipline that I was feeling so badly. And so what I didn't realize was that some people saw that from me. They thought, well, if Gary Goleman is depressed, then it can't be because he's a failure or a terrible person. They thought I was a good person and successful. So it was very helpful to hear that my opinion of myself as being I would constantly ask friends, and this must have gotten so irritating. When I was sick, I would say, "Do you think I'm a failure? Do you think I wasted my potential?" And as many times as they say no, my depression says, "No, they're just being nice." And yeah.
Well, it's funny. You did the state abbreviations set on Conan, which was such a hallmark for you, and so well received, so popular among comedians, among your peers.
Yeah.
When I talked to you about that the first time, you said, "Well, yeah, but now I'm scared. I'm never going to get to that height again." And The Great Depression comes out, and it's on HBO, and it's a huge hit. Are you still thinking like, "Oh, what if I don't top that? What, you know, do I have to get something even bigger than that for me to be worthwhile?"
No, but it was really interesting. The day after The Great Depression aired, Judd Apatow called me in the morning, and he said, "You're feeling hungover," and he knows I don't drink. So, but he understood how I felt. He says, "You feel like it's a hangover, and you're tempted right now to say, I have to get back out there and do something just as big, just as great, and get back on that treadmill. Right. And he said, but what you have to understand is that it is a treadmill and you will never get off it. And it will never be enough if that's what you are into, is the feeling you get from doing all the promotion and the press and getting all the accolades and the reviews. He said it will never end. And what you have to realize is that the only real thing really are your friends and your family, your wife and your the comedians you love. He says that's what he tries to get across in his movies. And that was so helpful, because I was feeling like, I hate to say this, but there was a feeling in me like, that's it. This is the greatest thing I've ever done. And I wake up and I feel kind of the same. I don't feel like a conquering hero or anything. And I just did 3 weeks of press and it was so much fun and exciting. And now I'm just going out to eat and nobody's cheering for me. And so I can see where you would be tempted to try and recreate that again and again, but I can't remember how long after, within a few days, I heard the same exact thing from Amy Schumer, who reached out, who said, this is not the excitement and adrenaline. It's not real. And it can be toxic. And that was such great advice. And very few people, I think, are able to share that advice, because so many people, their dream is to do this thing and then you do it and you almost feel guilty about saying, well, it doesn't feel like the cure-all.
Right.
Because it's not. It wasn't the cure-all. It was the accepting yourself that was the real victory.
So if someone comes to you and says, hey, Gary, I'm struggling with depression. Your comedy really touches me. It's really great, but I don't know what to do. What should I do? I mean, I imagine you get exactly this scenario of people coming to you. What do you tell them?
Well, a lot of times, if it's feasible, I like to try and get them to meet me somewhere. Mm. So they'll either have to walk. A lot of times I will meet them at Central Park and go for a long walk with them and tell them, I'll list all the things that I did to make me feel better. And then also my other big thing is I tell people that one of the reasons I was able to recover was that I was a really good patient. I listened to my doctor's orders and I took my medication when I was supposed to. And I didn't drink alcohol and I didn't stay out all night. And I did the cognitive behavioral therapy type things. I started doing TM and I just threw everything I could at it, but I was a good patient. And I would say that I can't make them feel all better today, but I can make them feel a little bit better today. And just from the long walk and try to get them to commit to other walks. And I tell them the 5-minute bargain and all these things and also keep my phone open to them, that they can call me or text me and I'll try to help them up. I feel, I don't want to use the word obligation, but I feel something along those lines with better connotations for what I owe the universe. Because I was able to recover. I'm sure that I made bargains explicit and implicit with God and the universe that if they saved me, I would help people. I would tell the story and try to return the favor and spread the word.
You gonna get another dog?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
When?
I think this summer I think I'll have some time off the road where I can train him or her, and then I have a book coming out in September that I'll have to go out on tour for, but then by then hopefully they'll be house trained, so my wife won't have to be the one to do everything by herself while I'm on the road.
Gary Gulman, congratulations on your recovery, and thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. This means a lot to me to be on here and share this with you. I'm really happy, and I will not discount how important our conversation was in I think October of 2017 to my recovery. You really got it. You really understood, and it felt good to share that with somebody. I don't think it's a coincidence that my durable recovery had its origin at that time.
Nice. Well, I'm glad it did, even though we only had one microphone for some reason.
I know. And it was, I believe it was on an ironing board.
Yeah. Yeah. We're kind of shoving it back and forth.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to work out. If you enjoyed hearing from Gary Gulman, if you enjoyed the continued existence of Depresh Mode, we need your help. Become a member, receive thank you gifts, make Depresh Mode available to yourself and to people around the world. You can do that. You have that power. Just go to MaximumFun.org/join. Find a level that works for you. That's up to you. Enjoy some of the thank you gifts and enjoy the show. Thank you. Next time on Depresh Mode, sometimes you can learn a lot about yourself by just sneaking a peek at the notes.
I went to one of my therapists during a bathroom break. I got up, I started walking out to the bathroom, and I looked down at her clipboard, and she wrote anxiety disorder, circled that, and then underneath it wrote depressed. And that was the first time in my life, and this is 2019, the first time in my life I'd even seen someone say anxiety disorder and depression when it comes to me. I spent 4 years trying to figure out what the hell was going on in my head. And it was like, oh.
Chris Powell is with us. Remember, my new show, Sleeping with Celebrities, is out now. It's a podcast designed to give you mild, relaxing conversation to listen to and a few laughs to hear as you doze off to sleep. Our latest episode features Justin McElroy of My Brother, and Me. Be sure to hit subscribe to our show, give us 5-star ratings, write us rave reviews. All of that helps to get the show out into the world where it can help folks. The Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is available in the United States by calling 988. It's available 24/7 for free. The Crisis Text Line, also free and always available. Text the word HOME to 741-741. We're on Instagram and Twitter at DepreshPod. If you're on Facebook, look up our mental health discussion group, Preshies. Join up for that. Our Depresh Mode newsletter is on Substack. Search that up. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at John Moe. Our electric mail address is depreshmode@maximumfun.org. Hi, credits listeners. When I host Sleeping with Celebrities, I use a different voice than I use on this show. I base this voice on how I used to talk when I first started in public radio, because that's how other people talked, and I thought I should do the same. It's different than the voice I use on this program. Depresh Mode is made possible by your contributions. The show is produced by Gabe Mara. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson, and we get booking help from Mara Davis. Rhett Miller wrote and performed our theme song, Building Wings.
I'm always falling off of cliffs now, building wings on the way down. I am figuring things out. Building wings, building wings, building wings. No one knows the reason. Maybe there's no reason. I just keep believing. No one knows the answer. Maybe there's no answer. I just keep on dancing.
Hey, this is Hannah from Minneapolis, and I promise you're not the only one who feels this way.
Depresh Mode is a production of Maximum Fun and Papa Chick. I'm John Moe. Bye now.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.